The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Did You Know Show. I am your host, Alex Parnuk, and together we'll attempt to resolve some of the most complex problems on the planet, but in a very common sense sort of way, something that seems to be sorely missing in this age of media information overload. In doing this show, one would ask, why have I committed myself to this task? The plain and simple answer is, I want to get information to you that seems to be missing and not provided in the old media. So join me in the show through your interaction by providing comments, suggestions, and if necessary, criticism when you don't agree. You can contact me at shout@theflypod.com. Welcome back to the Did You Know Show, and today we embark on a journey that does not stray too far from the banks of the Potomac River and the very heart of our government in Washington, D.C. We will delve into the District of Columbia and a small entity of the executive branch of government that is called Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency for the District of Columbia, hereafter referred to as CSOSA, for brevity's sake, because of the number of words. And notice that this is an executive federal agency that exists only within the framework of the District of Columbia. When picking this topic for my next podcast, I was struck by what I thought would be an easy discussion. But as you experience this discussion, you will find it to be a bit more complex and will bring into the open the convoluted manner in which the government entities are often created, changed, manipulated, and operated. Might I use the word illogical? But you, the listener, will be the judge of that. Firstly, for the historical reasons and a better understanding of our subject, I believe it is important to see how this small segment of the executive branch came about. And in order to do that, we need to go back in history and see just exactly how this District of Columbia came about. President George Washington selected the site, a diamond-shaped tract of land 100 square miles, which was near the junction of the Potomac and Eastern Branch Rivers. On July the 16th, 1790, Washington, D.C. was founded pursuant to the Residence Act of 1790. But know this, our first capital, where the Constitution was ratified on March the 4th, 1789, was in New York City. Now, within the Constitution, and specifically Article 1, Section 8, and Clause 18, it was determined that a district be formed unique to itself and not within the confines of any particular state. If one wishes to understand the reasoning behind these actions, a quick reading of the Federalist Papers, specifically Federalist Paper No. 43, would help you understand what was done and the process relating to the thinking that was going on at that time. During this junction, there was an ongoing dispute between the northern and southern states relating to the assumption of the war debt, and there were agricultural interests relating to slavery. But an agreement was finally reached, and George Washington appointed three commissioners to supervise the construction of the Capitol. A Frenchman, Pierre-Charles L'Enfant, designed the sweeping boulevards, with a self-taught African-American math wizard, Benjamin Banneker, provided the calculations for surveying the area, and our Capitol began to take form. In 1801, the district was reorganized under the Organic Act of 1801 passed by Congress, and the area included the cities of Washington, Georgetown, and Alexandria under the control of Congress. The city of Washington was then incorporated, and appointed mayor and council were used as a municipal governmental structure. Georgetown and Alexandria were left intact. In 1820, Congress authorized the city of Washington a new charter, and its residents could elect their own mayor. Under the Organic Act of 1871, a new, more efficient government was created, combining the city of Washington, Georgetown, and unincorporated areas as one entity as a way to have government run more efficiently. In 1874, large-scale projects bankrupted the city of Washington, and it was again reorganized and control over the area returned to the Congress through a three-member board appointed by the president with approval by the Senate. And finally, in 1973, the Home Rule Act was passed and signed by President Johnson, allowing for home rule by the residents of D.C. in that they elected their own mayor and a 13-member council. However, It should be noted, Congress retained certain rights. It had authority to review all bills passed by the city and could pass legislation affecting the residents without mayoral, council, or residential approval. They, the Congress, had the final say. And a side note, some historically interesting facts. During the War of 1812, Washington was burned by the British. The British burned most of the government buildings. And if you wonder why, well, it was sort of a payback. Earlier in this War of 1812, American forces had moved north into Canada, and during the invasion of Canada, had burned down a town called York, now known as Toronto. During the burning of Washington, the British soldiers did leave standing the Marine barracks and the residence of the Commandant of the Marines as a show of respect. But that's sort of a British thing to do. Another interesting aspect of Washington, D.C. was, yes, there were slaves in the city, but there was also a large population of free blacks who lived, worked, and called Washington their home. It should also be noted that even though slavery was discontinued by edict through the Emancipation Proclamation on January 1, 1863, Washington, D.C., however, had outlawed slavery 9 months earlier. The Washington, D.C. that we know and visit today is generally the same, except for some minor changes by the Macmillan Commission in 1902 and improvements in the park system, which were approved by Congress. While doing the research for this podcast, I had to indulge myself into that entity known as the District of Columbia, but also called Washington, D.C. In plain and simple terms, it is a city within a district encompassing the same geographical area. Today, this geographical area, known as the District of Columbia or Washington, D.C., is run by a mayor and a 13-member council. The governmental functions are divided into a myriad of districts, offices, and agencies that oversee everything from housing to policing and schools. As usual, I look to an organizational chart to see the extent of the burgeoning of this bureaucracy. I could not find an overall chart for Washington, D.C., but I did find individual groupings of departments, offices, and districts. I counted up a total of 14 distinct operations involved in the running of the District of Columbia. Just as in most cities, these bureaucracies have a tendency of growing themselves, and Washington, D.C. is not immune from that. As an example, I picked the Washington, D.C. school system to provide you an example of how things can get complex when dealing with a simple aspect of life, such as educating our children. The District of Columbia Public Schools are run by an appointed chancellor, under whom there are 11 separate groupings of activity from chief of staff to general counsel. With the various aspects of education, such as teaching, learning, planning, specialized institution, family and public engagement, I could go on and on, but that should provide you a word picture of what is going on. However, in looking at per-student spending, D.C., with the smallest student population, 73,911 students, spends $19,847 per student. This per-pupil spending is well above the national average of $10,667. Now, this data was obtained from the U.S. News article dated January the 29th, 2015, by Ali Bidwell. In another article in the Washington Post dated 12/18/2013 by Emma Brown, I quote, "District's performance continues to trail the large city average, according to a federal study released Wednesday." Also, when I looked at staffing numbers versus teachers, that number was twice as large, meaning you had twice as many staff as you had teachers. No wonder they had 11 different working groups within a school bureaucracy. Now back to the present. The city of Washington, as all other metro areas, suffers through many problems: insolvency, deteriorating neighborhoods, population loss, and crime. Let's return to the other half of this discussion today, the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency for the District of Columbia, or CSOSA. CSOSA was established pursuant to legislation passed as the National Capital Revitalization and Self-Government Improvement Act of 1997. This legislation was passed in order to improve the supervision of probationers, parolees, and provide pretrial service in the district. However, it took 3 years under a trusteeship before it was certified as an independent agency of the executive department. This new agency assumed adult probation and the parole department from the D.C. Superior Court, while the parole determination function was traveled to the United States Parole Commission, which is under the auspices of the Department of Justice. Also, it should be noted that within the legislation of the National Capital Revitalization and Self-Government Improvement Act, the Pretrial Services Agency for the District of Columbia, was taken from under the authority of the district and was turned into a separate and independently funded executive agency of the executive branch of government, but within the confines of this CSOSA. The mission of this CSOSA reads like many other mission statements by organizations dealing with convicted criminals. I quote, "To enhance public safety, prevent crime, and reduce recidivism among those supervised by this agency. The agency operates under Title 28, Chapter 8, Part 100 through 812 of the United States Code. The agency is organized with a director, a deputy, with a special assistant for both the director and deputy. Directly off the director slot on an organizational chart, we have an Equal Employment Opportunity Office, an Alternative Dispute Resolution Section, the Office of Professional Responsibility, and an MPD Liaison Office, which I'll assume is the Municipal Police Department Liaison Office. On the other side of this chart, I found, directly off the director, we find the Standards and Compliance Unit, the Continuity of Operations Unit, the Information Security Office, and lastly, the Quality Improvement Unit. Now, falling directly below the director office, we have 8 additional offices that report directly to the director. These are the Office of the General Counsel, Community Supervision Services, Community Justice Programs, Office of Legislative, Intergovernmental, and Public Affairs, Office of Administration, Office of Human Resources, Office of Information Technology, Office of Financial Management, and finally, the Office of Research and Evaluation. Now, below this organizational structure, there are 6 field offices located throughout Washington, D.C., with additional employees located at D.C. Metro Police Departments, a reentry section center, and also several outreach centers providing vocational and educational assistance at several locations, also in Washington, D.C. These parts and pieces of this agency were able to be described from an organizational chart provided by the agency and described herein. This information, if interested, is available on the Internet as a subfunction of csoca.gov site. According to their website, there are approximately 1,000 employees in this CSOSOCA with an operating budget of approximately $140 million. I found that CSOSA provided info on officer-to-offender ratio of approximately 50 to 1 with a total of 342 community supervision officers, leaving approximately 700 persons doing other types of assignments. I can only presume that these other employees are operating as a support function for those watching the offenders. So you see, what you have is a federal executive agency that is not only doing work within the geographic area of Washington, D.C., but is also still partially embedded within the police and court structure of the city of Washington. So that's the nitty and gritty of the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. So the last question, or what needs to be answered, is the why this function was taken upon by the executive branch instead of leaving it within the Washington, D.C. court and police system. In reading the congressional record from hearings on this issue, it appears that costs, workload, and pay parity of representation were major factors in this decision to federalize these court and offender services. Within the congressional record, I found that as to cost, the D.C. system was paying attorneys less than their federal counterparts in the federal system. I can only assume that this was also one of the moving reasons for the separation of the CSOCA from the authority of the District of Columbia to that of the executive branch of government. As is often the case, it is said, follow the money and the lawyers. Need I say more? And on a final note, it should be also explained that within the legislation of this National Capital Revitalization and Self-Government Improvement Act, the Pretrial Services Agency for the District of Columbia was also taken from under the authority of the District of Columbia and was turned into a separate and independently funded executive agency of the government. So what do we have? In simple, ordinary terms, we have a city, Washington, D.C., that has courts, police, parole, all those systems necessary to run the criminal justice system. And all of a sudden, by the quirk of past legislation and the movement of a presidential pen, out came the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency and Pretrial Services Agency, now to stand all alone as a separate and distinct part of not the city of Washington, D.C., but part of the federal executive branch of government, together and yet standing alone. Well, folks, that in a nutshell is what the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency and Pretrial Services Agency is all about. If one was to try and render a flowchart, I would challenge them to accomplish this task within the convoluted framework of the executive branch of government. So long.
Well, until next time in our next Did You Know show, keep your powder dry and your silver coins in your pocket.